With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. It's day two at the Citrus and Specialty Crop Expo in Tampa, Florida, and it's been really neat getting to meet the exhibitors and producers and see some faces that I saw last year as well. We've been chatting all about the similarities and differences of California and Florida agriculture, as well as how both states are working together to fight some of the common issues facing the industry. Delayed plantings for processing tomato leads to harvest backlog. As California growers harvest this season's processing tomato crop, there is concern that canneries could struggle to keep up with a backlog of fruit deliveries. Heavy rains left tomato fields wet and muddy through spring, disrupting plantings of processing tomato transplants, which continue through May. With much of the crop now being harvested at once, growers are worried about risks to fruits that can't be processed right away. Bruce Rominger of the California Tomato Growers Association said some growers may be encouraged to harvest early when tomatoes are a little green. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into our show headlines. Thompson says that the Farm Bill extension is likely. House Agriculture Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson says, quote, "We're probably going to need an extension," referring to the timing of the 2023 Farm Bill. At a listening session in Missouri earlier this week, the Pennsylvania Republican acknowledged that, quote, "the clock is ticking," with the current farm bill set to expire at the end of the fiscal year, September 30th. The event is one of many held by the committee that Thompson calls a, quote, perpetual brainstorming tour across rural America. The House Agriculture Committee is expected to release a draft version of the 2023 Farm Bill possibly by the end of the month. That's according to Thompson. The chairman says, quote, "There is a lot of competition for time on the House floor next month, with appropriation bills still needing attention as well. However, any continuing resolution would likely have a farm bill extension included." Thompson adds, quote, "I hope it's a very short extension, if one is needed." NAFB contributed to that report. And now here's AgNet West, Brian German with more agriculture news.
Several different UC programs are being incorporated into the Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education Program. Interim Director of UC SAREP, Ruth Dahlquist-Willard, explained how the program's going to function during a recent meeting of the California State Board of Food and Agriculture.
There has been a decision made to integrate three programs, SAREP, the Small Farms Network, and also the Master Food Preservers, to really leverage resources across all these programs, provide increased administrative support to manage large grants and contracts, and then to see what collaboration there can be kind of across the food chain to support local food, diversified farming systems, sustainable practices, all the way from production to processing to marketing. Another thing that we are expanding into more is technology and innovation for small farms. And so there's a lot of potential there for figuring out what kinds of appropriate technology can assist small farms to save labor and also implement more sustainable practices.
The Lake in Mendocino County's Grapes and Olive Field Day is coming up on Thursday, August 24th. Hosted by UC Cooperative Extension and the Lake County Wine Grape Commission, the first portion of the field day will take place at Chasewater Winery and Olive Mill in Kelseyville, beginning at 8 in the morning. Presentations during the olive session will include management practices for weeds, mine water, and invertebrate pests. There will also be a field demonstration of till, no-till management in perennial cropping systems. The second half of the event will begin at 10:30 at Beckstoffer Vineyards. Presentations will include information on weed management, grape viral and fungal diseases, pest management, and sunburn and heat stress in grapes. The final presentation before lunch will feature information on nutrient management in the field. More information about the field day is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, planet Earth officially saw the hottest July ever recorded. On a smaller scale, cities and states around the nation have seen record heat this summer. And USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says it will continue.
From the 22nd through the 28th, we are expecting above normal temperatures everywhere, except the Northeast, where we expect near to below normal temperatures, greatest likelihood of extreme heat continuing across the deep South, generally from the southern plains to the southern Atlantic coast. With that heat, we expect near or below normal rainfall across the southern or southeastern half of the Great Plains, on through the south, and then extending northward through much of the Corn Belt. Wetter than normal conditions from the 22nd through the 28th, generally confined to New England, southern Florida, southern Texas, and along and west of a line from Arizona to the Dakotas.
Meanwhile, he says current weather factors may increase the risk of wildfires in the Northwest this week.
From the 22nd through the 28th, we are expecting above normal temperatures everywhere except the Northeast, where we expect near to below normal temperatures, greatest likelihood of extreme heat continuing across the deep South, generally from the southern plains to the southern Atlantic coast. With that heat, we expect near or below normal rainfall across the southern or southeastern half of the Great Plains, on through the south, and then extending northward through much of the Corn Belt. Wetter than normal conditions from the 22nd through the 28th, generally confined to New England, southern Florida, southern Texas, and along and west of a line from Arizona to the Dakotas.
And the Atlantic storm season may be worse than originally thought.
The National Weather Service has upped its forecast from that original 12 to 17 named storms. The new forecast is 14 to 21. Meanwhile, the number of hurricanes has been increased from that original range of 5 to 9. That number is now 6 to 11. And the number of major hurricanes has been increased from 1 to 4 up to a range of 2 to 5.
In other news, members of the House Agriculture Committee attended the Missouri State Fair Monday, holding a Farm Bill listening session. Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson reports several common themes from farmers and ranchers.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is kind of interesting that makes a lot of sense is some type of domestic promotion program for hardwoods. You know, we do great programs with foreign market development and market access program for foreign trade and looking for foreign markets. Also heard consistently, we need to do a better job investing in that. Those are at the same level as when they were created. If I could find the money, and it's a matter of finding money and moving it around.
Increasing reference price for commodities is another priority for those farmers.
Especially because of inflation and the margin, you know, reference prices today for many of the commodities are not really in a position to be helpful. But I do think the interesting concept, looking at domestic markets and what can we do more to promote those domestic markets. Obviously, that's market access, whether it's domestic or foreign, is incredibly important for our farmers and ranchers.
Missouri Republican Representative Mark Alford hosted the event.
I think we accomplished what we wanted to do today because we got our community together. This was not about me. This isn't about GT or anybody else up here. This was about the people who showed up and let us know what was on their hearts, souls, and minds when it comes to the Farm Bill. This is a national issue. Unless we take in the information from the nation, we're not going to be able to deliver the product that's going to benefit everyone.
The House Agriculture Committee is expected to release the draft 2023 Farm Bill in September. That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, some wonder when the U.S. cattle herd will see a rebuilding process. But until we see real numbers indicating that, Well Jordan reports good cattle prices will continue.
Following record culling numbers in 2022, cattle prices are seeing all-time highs. As producers begin to rebuild the U.S. cow herd, it will be a slow process. According to Holden Ramey, analyst with Cattle Facts, strong cattle prices may be here for a while.
We are expecting next year beef cow numbers to be a little smaller, and that is kind of where your low in the cycle comes, is in 24. And then after that, you know, those heifers that we retain this fall start coming into the system. You should start to see beef cow numbers pick up in 2025 and 2026. Another just important thing that we've kind of been talking about on the expansion is it's just likely going to be, it won't be as rapid as the last expansion we saw out of 2014, you know, how we built cow inventories back in a big hurry. This time's likely to be a little bit slower just because of interest rates are obviously a headwind. In terms of, one, either if you're going to buy bred cows or heifers, or two, if you're going to develop your own, prices should continue to be pretty well supported by the tighter supply situation in the 2024, probably 25 as well.
For more information, visit southeastagnet.com. From the Southeast Agnet, I'm Will Jordan.
Thanks, Will. Well, researchers at Washington State University's College of Veterinary Medicine have developed a survey to better understand how those who raise sheep and goats manage the health of their animals and the obstacles encountered. They're hoping the results of the survey will inform further research and efforts to improve access to veterinary care and foster antibiotic stewardship on a small-scale, small ruminant livestock operations in the U.S. Now, the survey is completely voluntary, should take no longer than 10 to 15 minutes or so to complete. All responses will be anonymous, so producers can answer candidly. Producers who are at least 18 years of age and own or manage sheep or goats in the U.S. are eligible to participate. If you'd like to learn more about this survey, you can go to the American Sheep Producers Association website, sheepusa.org. And the National Cattlemen's Foundation is now accepting applications for the annual W.D. Farr Scholarship Program. It was established back in 2007, and the scholarship recognizes outstanding graduate students pursuing careers in meat science and animal agriculture. Two $15,000 grants were awarded to graduate students who demonstrate superior achievement in academics and leadership and are committed to the advancement of the beef industry. Scholarship recipients recognize that the program not only benefits their work, but also the entire industry. Now, graduate students must apply online by September 22nd. The scholarship recipients will then be recognized at the Cattle Industry Convention in Orlando. That'll be January 31st through February 2nd. If you'd like more information about the scholarships and how to apply, you can go to nationalcattlemensfoundation.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
As harvest begins, the American Seed Trade Association reminds farmers to be diligent in taking the proper precautions to ensure treated seed does not enter the domestic or export grain supply. When properly handled, seed treatments are an effective agronomic tool that provides seeds the necessary protection for a strong, healthy start. Completely remove all treated seed left in containers and equipment used to handle harvested grain and dispose of it properly. Always be careful to follow state and federal guidelines for proper handling, storage, and disposal of treated seed. For more information, visit seed-treatment-guide.com or contact your seed dealer.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Gen Z is called the foodie generation, but recent research shows a darker side to their relationship with food. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. A wide-ranging research study from global communications consultancy Ketchum shows 61% of Gen Z have felt pressure on them since childhood to eat a certain way to communicate their identity and beliefs, which has created a negativity and anxiety among this food-obsessed generation. Melissa Kinch, president of Ketchum's food consultancy, says since early childhood, this generation has seen food politicized and been taught to choose food products related to values. But she says now they're exhausted. She says it's left them feeling insecure and negative about cooking and food. An overwhelming majority of Gen Z says that sustainability, animal welfare, and LGBTQ rights are important factors when buying food, but they are not significant purchase drivers. Other priorities like taste, value, and affordability outdo the issues that are important to them. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Several weather and climate agencies around the world have been saying
the globe is coming off of its hottest July and hottest month on record.
And USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, this week has echoed those findings after looking at global air and ocean temperatures for July.
They were running more than 2 degrees Fahrenheit above what we saw on average during the 20th century from 1901 to 2000.
Yes, land temperatures are breaking records, but Rippey says
a lot of that warmth is being driven by incredibly high oceanic temperatures.
Not just in the Pacific, but around the world. Warmer oceans send more moisture into the warmer air, creating
heavier rainfall events, more rain falling in a short period of time. And that can actually contribute to more runoff and can lead to flash flooding and river flooding.
And we are certainly seeing more of that as the world gets warmer. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen. Lending corporate cash to shareholders of a closely held corporation can be an effective way to give the shareholders use of the funds without the double tax consequences of dividends. But an advance or loan to a shareholder must be a bona fide loan to avoid being a constructive dividend. In addition, the loan must have adequate interest. Can you borrow money from your farming business and avoid the double tax consequence of dividends? You can if a loan is truly involved. If not, it's taxed as a dividend distribution. And it's not enough for you to simply declare that you intended the withdrawal to be a loan. There must be additional reliable evidence that the transaction is a debt. So what does the IRS look for to determine if a loan is really a loan? If you have unlimited control of the corporation, there's a greater potential for a disguised dividend, and if the corporation hasn't been paying dividends despite having the money to do so, that's another strike. Did you record the advances on the corporate books and records as loans and execute notes with interest charged, a fixed maturity date, and security given? Were there attempts to repay the advances in a bona fide manner? The control issue is a big one for farming and ranching corporations, and few farm corporations pay dividends. This makes it critical to carefully build up evidence supporting loan characterization. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen.
Many farmers who incorporate cover crops got started in it because of incentives, either cash or crop insurance discounts. The question is,
once that incentive payment goes away, does the farmer stick with cover crops?
And survey says the answer is yes. Dr. Rob Myers with USDA's Sustainable Ag Research and Extension Group at the University of Missouri telling reporters the other day that according to a nationwide survey of farmers,
67% said definitely yes, they're going to stick with cover crops after those payments end. Another 22, almost 23% probably yes. So we're looking at about 90% are saying they're either definitely or probably going to stick with cover crops.
And on the flip side of that,
we only had about 3% that said they would stop using cover crops, either probably or definitely, after the incentive ends.
And so Dr. Myers says
that finding that 90% are either definitely or probably going to continue cover crops after the incentive payment ends really explodes the myth that farmers only do cover crops when they're paid to do them. And once the payment goes away, that's the end of it.
But that does not mean incentives have no place. Surveys show farmers who have not taken the cover crop plunge are very interested in cover crop incentives.
And so as a motivational tool to get farmers into cover cropping, I think incentives do play a really important role. And they help cover that transition period of the first 2 or 3 years.
Because there's no getting around it that during the first 2 to 3 years of planting cover crops,
most farmers, let's face it, are going to have a slight reduction in their net profit because of the cost of that cover crop seed. After about 3 years, both from our survey and other data, we've seen that you start to break even and even gain some net profit as yields gradually increase and the soil improves.
So does this mean that in the new farm bill, we could see a cutback in cover crop incentives to farmers? Not likely, according to American Seed Trade Association CEO Andy Levine.
Well, I think there's a strong interest in continuing to increase the incentives, no matter how they're proposed, whether it's a cash payment, whether it's a reduction in crop insurance or others. I think everyone's looking at what best fits in farm policy.
But the experts say the role of incentives may not be so much to help farmers continue using cover crops, but rather to get them to start using them in the first place. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Will the record hot summer heat continue around the nation? Cities and states around the nation have seen record heat this summer. Does it continue next week? Brad Rippey, USDA meteorologist, has the national weather forecast for August 22nd through the 28th.
We are expecting above normal temperatures everywhere except the Northeast, where we expect near to below normal temperatures. Greatest likelihood of extreme heat continuing across the deep South, generally from the southern plains to the southern Atlantic coast. With that heat, we expect near or below normal rainfall across the southern or southeastern half of the Great Plains, on through the south, and then extending northward through much of the Corn Belt. Wetter than normal conditions from the 22nd through the 28th, generally confined to New England, southern Florida, southern Texas, and along and west of a line from Arizona to the Dakotas.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
79 years and counting.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Smokey Bear, the iconic U.S. Forest Service spokesbear on wildfire prevention, celebrates 79 years of existence this month. It was August 9th, 1944, that the Forest Service authorized the character of Smokey in posters and advertisements. A real-life bear cub rescued from a New Mexico wildfire in 1950 would become Smokey's living symbol for 26 years. Over the course of the 79 years and through today, delivery of Smokey's message comes with the help of songs.
Smokey Bear says only you can prevent wildfires.
Public service announcements and celebrities such as Dolly Parton.
Hold off on burning leaves, tie up chains on trailers to avoid sparks, don't park vehicles on dry grass. Why, even a cozy campfire can spark a wildfire.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Lawmakers from the House and Senate are on the annual August recess and back in their respective districts and states. Tom Donnelly, American Farm Bureau Federation Director of Grassroots Program Development, says lawmakers will spend that time hearing from voters.
So it's a great time for farmers and ranchers to meet with and communicate with lawmakers. This year is especially important since Congress is working to reauthorize the Farm Bill. And we've been encouraging our members and all farmers and ranchers to make sure that they take advantage of the August recess and discuss the merits of the Farm Bill, how it has helped them over the last 5 years, and what changes would make it better going forward.
He says there are several ways to do so.
If you don't know who your lawmaker is, you can easily go to fb.org/lookup. Enter your street address and your zip code. and that will show you who your lawmakers are. Make sure you sign up for a Lawmakers e-newsletter. That way you'll be informed when they're back in town, and you can even sign up for a town hall meeting and visit a county fair when they're there. And you can always schedule a meeting with lawmakers and staff. Also, don't forget, offer the opportunity to visit your farm or ranch.
Donnelly says forming a relationship with lawmakers can set farmers or ranchers up to be a resource for those elected officials well into the future.
And when they get active, when they engage on a legislative or regulatory issue, their voices are heard. That's the importance of grassroots advocacy. To get out there, meet with your lawmakers, tell them what's going on in your town, in your district, in your county, at your farm, at your ranch, and make sure that they hear the agriculture voice.
Visit fb.org/advocacy to learn more. Michael Clements, Washington.
How might one define agricultural literacy? For that matter, how many people in our country are ag literate? First, a possible definition. Make it three. Provided by North Carolina A&T University professor Kathleen Leong. First,
the knowledge of agriculture in general, whether it's different subjects like a crop, animal, or about different ways of doing agriculture like a conservation practice, high tunnel operations, that sort of thing.
Next, the understanding of how agriculture is embedded in broad, different aspects of life.
Agriculture itself has different disciplines relating to bioenergy, biology, chemistry, economics, business, and food safety, and nutrition, health, family. Everything is a part of the general agricultural umbrella. So understanding how agriculture in different subjects and in different ways linking back to our lives.
Then there is the education aspect of teaching agriculture to the public at large.
To help people to use agriculture in general to enhance our own livelihood, to work within our own community, and then to help families and individuals to improve their opportunity. There are many, many ways that agriculture could embed it in different job opportunities and different skill sets training.
So when it comes to the degree of agricultural literacy in the U.S., Leong says from her perspective and others,
I notice a lot of folks, whether it's young or old, in this generation, they are further removed from the rural communities, from the agriculture operations. A lot of young people don't quite understand how different type of crops grow, how different type of animals we raise them on the farm, what kind of challenges that farmers have to deal with.
Leong is among those using methods to improve agricultural literacy, doing so through educating teachers about the farm and the potential opportunities in agriculture. That's being done through a curriculum supported by a USDA grant. More about that in a future program. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
What GMO crops are grown and sold in the U.S.? Well, there's corn, like me, soybeans, canola, sugar beets, and cotton. Typically, we're ingredients in certain foods. GMO alfalfa, corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton are used as animal food. And while you won't find many GMOs in the produce section, there are versions of GMO apple, summer squash, potato, and papaya in a few markets. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
In this week's Almond Update from the Almond Board of California, Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Grow West and Almond Leadership Program graduate Lucas Schmidt joined the Almond Journey podcast to talk with host Tim Hammerich about strategic planning and lessons learned over the past few years of hardship.
You look at the size and scale of almonds and where it's grown and you add the sustainability piece and water and just freedom to operate in the state. There's a lot that goes into decisions today. And, you know, agronomy is one of them, but also logistics, you know, the quality, trying to react and show up well to the consumer. So all those facets we're involved in. We have some people that play in every piece of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you wrote a piece on planning, and, you know, planning and budgeting is one of those things where I think when a lot of people hear the word, they think, yeah, we know. Yeah, we're supposed to plan. We're supposed to budget. But specifically kind of during some of the tumultuous times that the industry has experienced, could you just talk about that? I'd like to just kind of go into that thought piece a little bit and maybe just share what from that do you hope the industry kind of internalizes?
Yes. No, that's a great question. And I think sometimes, and, you know, the whole planning and forecasting, one, it's very clear we can't do it enough and think ahead enough, in my opinion. You've got to be grounded with the day-to-day, but also be looking ahead to try to make sure your plans align to what's coming. And then, quite honestly, and we're far from perfect at it, but what we try to do is, you know, get the ideas, vet the ideas, build the plan, and then make sure you're agile enough to adjust if needed, because we are, at the end of the day, you know, dealing with Mother Nature and weather dynamics and agriculture. And so, you know, it's very important that you're able to deal with facts, but also adjust when appropriate. And like I said, it's not easy whatsoever to deal with. So,
yeah, I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about uncertainty and about how people say, like, oh, it feels like we're in a time of more uncertainty than ever. Times are more uncertain than ever. And I've said that, I've thought that a lot. But the point that he was making was like, there's no time where the future is certain. Like, you know, we never know where the future is going. It may feel like more uncertainty if things aren't going the way we want them to, but it's never certain. And I wonder how do you think about planning and forecasting in a time where it feels like, shoot, anything could happen? We have no idea what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I think the last several years really challenged all of us. You know, we're no matter what industry or what segment of the business you're in, it really exposed we were going through a time of just-in-time inventory, Tim, on everything. And quite honestly, it was working. And there wasn't a huge expansion in assets. It's just we're dealing with a global supply, no matter what industry you're in. You throw in, you know, the logistics pieces, some of the change that clearly is happening in other countries and here. You add it all together, and the last couple of years really exposed some flaws there that, wow, we weren't ready for that. And so I think it really plays into the planning thing. Quite honestly, the silver lining and some of that stuff has some serious staying power as far as just making sure, what did we learn through that process? Obviously, it was painful for, you know, a lot of folks, but the silver lining in it for me, you know, a couple different things. Communication's key. I think it forced all of us, no matter if you were a producer or a service company like ours, or an import-export, the communication, it forced us all to have better discussions. And quite honestly, the other side of it, which is very intriguing to me, is it did force us to evaluate who we're doing business with and why. And so I think that also is healthy on, are you partnered with the right people? Can you rely on them? Do you know their business? Do they know your business well? And because there was times where, you know, you really had to forecast, plan. You couldn't be everything to everyone during those times. And quite honestly, it's still a relationship business in a lot of the facets of the market.
This may be a dumb question, but I get the freedom of asking dumb questions because I get to be the one to edit them out when they're really dumb. What advice would you have to someone who's thinking, okay, I don't know how well I know my business partners or the people I do business with? What are some ways that I should be assessing how well I know the people I rely on for what it is I do? Is there a way to assess that and a way to improve on that?
Yeah, so definitely not easy. It takes some time and commitment. The way I like doing it is setting up meeting and going seeing operations and their people, because you can assess a lot seeing them in their element. Granted, you can't do that all the time if you're dealing with international partners or whatever, right? But it is so key. And I think it's something that gets missed a lot, is in the good times, you may not see the need because things are good, right? If there's challenges, do you know enough to be able to plan around, either get an additional partner or you know that they've got your back. So quite honestly, I think there's still some role for people doing business with people, Tim, and it could be just like we're doing. It could be the Zoom piece or a Teams piece or follow-up, but the deeper you can get within your supply partners and business partners is so key. Yeah, because I mean, there are so many stories, what we went through the last 2 to 3 years, and a lot of assumptions were being made. And then they found out that is not going to take place. And they didn't have the information to be able to react to him. And so, yeah, can't say that enough. And for us is, you know, we even joke, it's like, well, let's go call on a customer. Let's go see what they're seeing. And, you know, we're blessed to have a lot of good people, just like, I mean, the industry is full of them. But it's amazing going out with a customer and seeing what they're facing is so key.
Are there any examples you can share of like when a lack of planning has really, really showed itself and the importance of planning has really showed? Anything either from your all's experience or something you've heard from a customer? Obviously, we want to be sensitive to anybody's personal information, but any just general examples you can share?
Yeah, I'll reference some of the supply disruptions that we all faced during COVID, and it could even be port if you're trying to ship out almonds. Or yeah, there were several examples where, like jugs, looking at the crop protection side, or if it's a tariff impact that's going to impact fertilizer in the port of Stockton, for example. You know, we saw definitely through last couple years that we relied on more rail shipments than we have in the past. Well, that's something you can't react to overnight, right? Either you've got rail siding and capabilities or not.
To listen to the entire episode, search Almond Journey Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and look for episode 45, Strategic Planning with Lucas Schmidt.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. Torres Small to lead the first trade mission to Angola. USDA Deputy Secretary Joe Till Torres Small will lead the first ever agribusiness trade mission to Angola November 28 through December 1st. USDA's Foreign Agriculture Service is accepting applications from American exporters who wish to participate in this mission. Torres Small says, quote, "When it comes to trade opportunity, sub-Saharan Africa is both promising and often overlooked, and the USDA trade mission to Angola presents an incredible prospect for America's food and agricultural exporters to expand and explore new business opportunities. Angola is a perfect location for U.S. exports to introduce more American-made products to African consumers. With a population of almost 36 million people, many of which in the middle and high-income brackets, Angola is looking for high-quality imported products. With U.S. exports to Angola totaling $236 million, it's the seventh largest African market for the U.S. NAFB contributed to that report.
USDA is holding a federal milk marketing order hearing starting August 23rd in Carmel, Indiana. American Farm Bureau Federation economist Danny Munch says USDA will consider 21 proposals during the hearing.
The primary proposal was from National Milk Producers Federation's original proposal made on May 1st. The American Farm Bureau Federation, we got an additional 4 proposals, and there was a bunch of proposals from numerous other groups that will be considered as well. The USDA is going to allow dairy farmers to testify throughout this hearing.
Munch says there are two ways farmers can participate in the hearing.
You can either testify in person or virtually. The in-person option, farmers can show up at any time. All they have to do is find a USDA official, and they'll have up to 60 minutes to provide context and testimony on any of the issues. If farmers are interested in testifying virtually, they have to pre-register on the Monday of the week they hope to testify on, and then they will be able to testify on that Friday. They expect the hearing to last potentially 3 to 4 weeks or more, so farmers will have up to 4 weeks or more to testify virtually.
Virtual registration will be available at ams.usda.gov. Munch says it's important USDA hears from dairy farmers.
Federal milk marketing orders influence how dairy farmers are paid every month, and historically has always been based on dairy farmer input. So it's important for dairy farmers to make their voices heard. How has the federal milk marketing order impacted them in the past several years? And how can we advocate for a system that's modernized and more reflective of what the federal milk marketing order system is meant to provide, which is a fair market price for farmers.
Michael Clements, Washington.
Variable rate technology adoption is increasing. New data from USDA's Economic Research Service shows variable rate technology adoption is on the rise. Farmers use variable rate technologies to control the amount of farm inputs, such as seed, fertilizers, and chemicals, applied as farm machinery moves across the field. Data from USDA's Agricultural Resource Management Survey shows that initial adoption in the late 1990s and early 2000s was sluggish, remaining below markedly over the last decade. The adoption rate for corn stood at 37.4% of planted acres in 2016. That's up 11.5% in 2005. Cotton acreage showed a similar increase, rising from 5.4% in 2007 to 22.7% in 2019. Recent adoption rates across other crops include 13.9% for sorghum in 2019, 18.8% of winter wheat planted acres in 2017, and 25.3% of soybean planted acres in 2018. NAFB contributed to that report.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.